Welcome to Staff Voices by the Center for Deployment Psychology. Today, Dr. Kelly Cressman discusses fear of fear in our series of podcasts for PTSD.
Evidence-based treatments for PTSD are all about getting patients to confront and engage in thoughts and feelings associated with the traumatic event in the service of recovery. Whether confrontation is verbally mediated, as in CPT, experientially mediated, as in PE, or even covert, as you would find in EMDR, the goal is the same. We want our patients to take on the tough things, the things that make them feel anxious, ashamed, sad, or angry, and to tolerate the discomfort that comes along with it so they can engage with the traumatic experience, learn from it, and eventually think and feel differently about it. This rationale makes sense to us as therapists, and we have the benefit of loads of empirical data and the professional experiences of ourselves and our colleagues to help us feel confident about asking patients to do this difficult thing. Patients, on the other hand, buy this rationale with varying degrees of enthusiasm, to say the least, and though most patients accept and tolerate the treatment well, there are some patients who, despite our most convincing rationales, have a great deal of difficulty with the idea that they should willingly do something that makes them feel bad. Termed fear of fear, these patients are actually afraid of experiencing any type of discomfort because discomfort, whether fear-based or more related to sadness, guilt, or anger, all roads and all negative emotions lead to anxiety. If you've done this long enough, you've met some of these patients. The idea of willingly thinking about, discussing, or doing things that increase discomfort, even in the service of eventual recovery, is anathema to them. Facing any kind of discomfort results in considerable feelings of anxiousness and the full range of physiological, behavioral, and emotional responses that go along with that. The construct that describes this type of response to discomfort has been described as anxiety sensitivity. In the past, anxiety sensitivity has been viewed as a cognitive vulnerability or a trait-like set of fear surrounding the experience of anxiety. Those with high levels of anxiety sensitivity seem to focus their fears and worries along three dimensions. First, they fear that observable bodily reactions like shaking or trembling will elicit social judgment or derision. Second, that the physical sensations associated with their discomfort are signs of ill health or are in themselves dangerous. And third, that their cognitive difficulties are actually harbingers of insanity. They worry about going crazy. Though we have long understood that anxiety sensitivity is a risk factor for PTSD, there's good evidence that the relationship is much more complex than that. There are at least two ways that anxiety sensitivity contributes to the development and maintenance of PTSD. First, people with pre-existing anxiety sensitivity may be more prone to develop PTSD because their reactions to the trauma are amplified by their sensitivity to discomfort, and their interpretations of their reactions tend to be more negative and more extreme. Consequently, in the aftermath of the trauma, these individuals may become more likely to interpret transient reactions as catastrophic, to engage in avoidance as a means of coping, and, well, you can see where all that's headed. And secondly, because previously neutral symptoms of arousal are often paired with aversive reactions at the time of the trauma, these previously ignored or innocuous arousal symptoms are classically conditioned to elicit fear and discomfort. So, much like the sounds and smells that were present during the trauma become cues for danger, so too do the slight increases in heart rate or the experience of startle, even in a relatively safe circumstance. In this instance, a person who may not have been particularly aware of or sensitive to their own internal arousal states may become sensitized to these states as part of the experience of the traumatic event, developing increased anxiety sensitivity as a result of the trauma. The relationship, then, is dynamic and reciprocal. Regardless of which came first, anxiety sensitivity and PTSD symptoms predict one another over time. And since the relationship is bidirectional, the two phenomena probably act together in a nasty spiral, wherein increased symptoms of PTSD lead to intensified sensitivity to anxiety, which, in turn, worsens PTSD symptom severity. Because of this relationship, it makes sense to assess for anxiety sensitivity as part of an initial PTSD assessment, and to factor anxiety sensitivity into the treatment plan as you move forward with treatment. So how do you do that? For some patients, those with less debilitating levels of anxiety sensitivity, it may be useful to get them moving and experiencing those sensations in other more positive contexts. There is research showing that physical exercise may reduce anxiety sensitivity. Given the overall benefits of physical exercise for health and mood, this seems like a good bet for many patients. Other patients may need a more focused approach, and there are some clues about where to put that focus if you look at the dimensions of anxiety sensitivity that I mentioned earlier. To review, those with high anxiety sensitivity are excessively focused on and sensitive to the internal experience of anxiety, principally the physical sensations of anxiety, though by extension the thoughts and emotions that cue anxiety are there as well. And furthermore, they interpret their physical sensations as meaningful in some distinctly familiar ways. They fear that the visible signs of their discomfort, the shaking, the trembling, will result in public notice and judgment, that the sensations themselves are harmful or indicate illness, and that the sensations are indicative of anxiety or severe mental illness. Now, does this sound like anything you've ever heard of before? If you're thinking panic disorder, you're definitely on the right track. Research suggests that anxiety sensitivity can be reduced by techniques targeting the fear of anxiety directly, such as those techniques used in treatment of panic disorder. Using interoceptive exposure, which involves gradual, repeated exposure to feared bodily sensations in supervised therapeutic exercises, Wald and Taylor were able to reduce anxiety sensitivity in PTSD patients, presumably by helping participants to understand that the sensations they experience are not associated with disaster that they fear. To the extent that either interoceptive exposure or physical exercise reduces anxiety sensitivity, these techniques may be useful as a prelude to therapy for the treatment of PTSD, regardless of which protocol you eventually choose. For those wishing a more structured approach, Falsetti and colleagues have published data using interoceptive exposure as part of a CPT protocol, and I've treated several patients myself using a combination of interoceptive exposure and PE with some excellent results. Every patient is unique, and there may be a few patients suffering from bona fide panic disorder comorbid to their PTSD, and they may require a full course of treatment for the panic symptoms before they're able to take on exposures or cognitive restructuring related to the trauma. But for many, interoceptive exposure and exercise can be incorporated into the PTSD protocol quite effectively. If you want to read more about interoceptive exposure in the treatment of PTSD and panic disorder, check the links provided on our website. And if you're new to interoceptive exposure, make sure to consult with colleagues about how to organize and implement this highly effective type of exposure.